Good morning. John Hines in for Denny Long on this Saturday morning. Time for some car talk here with our friends from Lloyd's Automotive. Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul. I'm talking about Nick Stoffel, who's going to join us here. And I'll remind you that if you've got a question for Nick, you can text at 651-461-9226. Or you can also call in 651-461-9226, and we'll get your questions on. And I'll say good morning, Nick. How you doing this morning, my friend?
Doing well, John. How are you?
Oh, there we go. For a moment there, I thought we were shy of a connection here. Hey, let me tell people, too, as we get going, how they can get in touch with Lloyd's Automotive. Of course, it's lloydsautomotive.net if you want more information. Or you can call them at 651-228-1316. Hey, Nick, I want to ask you about this to begin with. With the UAW going out on strike, about 10% of the workers so far, as of midnight on Thursday into Friday, we've seen the first day of the strike and pickets at a number of locations. But we hear about the ripple effect and how this will affect other businesses, other parts of the community. For each striking auto worker, somebody anticipated it would have an impact on six other working Americans. What does this mean? Have you guys thought about this at Lloyd's Automotive in terms of parts and things like that that may become scarce in the days to come if this, depending on how long this strike will last?
Yeah, it'll be interesting. You know, I mean, as we know, costs on everything has gone up, and, you know, at least at the strike, you're going to assume there might be a shortage of new vehicles, which some might say that in favor of us because there's fewer cars to buy, so you have to fix what you have. But I just think for the long run, just to keep things moving is probably the best plan. You know, we've been very fortunate. We always stay really quite busy, and, parts have gotten definitely better. But it's funny because there's certain items still, you know, here a couple years later after all the shortages we were going through that we still have a hard time finding. And what's happened is, it feels like it's almost become acceptable where, like, you know, our policy used to be every car every day, and we try very hard to get every car done the same day that it arrives so we can get people back on the road and back and living their lives. And it feels like more often than not we have a few days or sometimes a week, and sometimes, you know, there's like things are discontinued or not available because they haven't been fulfilled. And then we start scrambling trying to find another approach, another way, and it's different. It's definitely different, and you hope that this doesn't continue that trend. Hopefully we can come to an agreement and people can get back to work and things can get back moving forward.
You know, we know this, and you know this as well as anybody, that more and more of us are getting more and more miles on the car that we have. Rather than running out to replace to get a new one, we're trying to get the most out of the vehicles we have. Is this still the trend in the business? Is this pretty much what you're seeing on a day-to-day basis?
Absolutely. And as you mentioned, a lot of our, you know, a couple hundred thousand miles on a vehicle, you shouldn't be afraid. I mean, it's, you know, if you're old enough, you know, 100,000 miles was a magical milestone with the car. Now they're just honestly breaking in. The key, though, is we have to maintain them. I mean, usually the vehicles that we see, not all, the vehicles that we see that have some of these earlier failures or problems oftentimes has to do with the lack of maintenance. You know, if you listen with Denny, you know, we talk about oil changes almost on a weekly basis, and I can't stress that enough. If you do those little maintenance items, which cost money for sure, but it's way less expensive on the long run versus a big repair, that, and then you're not going to have to buy a new vehicle, which we see they're already so expensive, and who knows what will happen after the situation that you got going on now.
Yeah, I got to ask you about this when we talk about, because when you mentioned oil change, I always think of oil change and tire rotation. And thinking about tire rotation, we recently just came through a very hot spell in the Twin Cities with temperatures into the 90s, you know, day after day. And these things all have an effect on tire pressure. And, you know, so many vehicles now, you can check your tire pressure while you're driving, check it from the from the dashboard. And, you know, so many vehicles now, you can check your tire pressure while you're driving, check it from the steering wheel, push this button, and it'll show you each individual tire. But we should see, you know, with these temperatures, now we've got a coolish morning, a 57-degree start to the day. Does this have a major impact on tire pressures as we're rolling down the highway?
Well, we joke about it because it's usually as you run into this season now and things get cooler mornings, as you mentioned, that people might wake up, fire up their vehicle and head down the road, and that tire light might be on. It was on for a moment, and after I drove for a mile or two, it went out. Well, as you know, just as the temperatures increase, the pressures will increase. The same is true for as it cools down. So you might find here in the next few weeks that your tire pressures have lost a little, and it's just to do with the temperature. It's not there's anything wrong with your tire or your wheel. So you might find yourself topping off a couple of pounds of pressure in each tire just to satisfy that threshold to keep that light off.
All right, refresh for me now. When do I check my tire pressure? If like in the morning when it's cool, if the manufacturer recommends 35 pounds of 35 PSI per tire, do I do that in the morning and make sure everything is up to snuff and then watch perhaps as the day goes on and as I drive that they might exceed that 35? What's the wiggle room in there, so to speak, Nick?
So the placard in the door jamb will say at cold temp. So it would say if the vehicle hasn't been running, just stationary. The ambient temperature might have a minor effect, but truthfully, as you start driving the vehicle and the rotating of the pavement and the tread creates quite a bit of heat, and that'll cause that tire to increase. And when I say increase, we're talking just a couple pounds PSI. This isn't significant. You're not going to blow out a tire or anything that dramatic. But if the door jamb says 35, you're 35, 36, cold, you're fine. You might see if your vehicle is equipped with the gauges that you've mentioned, it might go to 37, maybe 38, but nothing significant. It's just a few PSI difference. But what I was touching on earlier, let's say it gets down to 30, and also 29 might be the threshold on your vehicle. It hits 29, you start the vehicle up, you drive a mile or two, all of a sudden it, you know, as it warms up, increases to 30, 31, well, the light goes back off and met that threshold. So there's a few PSI wiggle room, as you said. Once again, I wouldn't get too worried or too excited about it. You know, if the light's off, you're fine. If the light comes on, it goes back off, you know you're just a couple pounds off, and you need to have them just adjusted.
Let me remind everybody, too, that if you'd like to text in a question for Nick, you can do that on the City's One Plumbing Talk and Text Line at 651-461-9226. Or you can call in, same number, 651-461-9226. And we can take care of it this way. So we'll get to your questions and give you a chance. Nick Stoffel, the boss at Lloyd's Automotive. Or is the customer still the boss, Nick?
Well, the customer's always the boss. I'm the last one in line.
Yeah, okay. It just kind of trickles down to you at that particular point. So feel free to bring that up and to get your question in, and we'll pass them along as quickly as we can. Here's one. Let me start with this from the City's One Plumbing Talk and Text Line here. Nick, I have a 2005 Honda Accord with a V6, 180,000 miles. Is there advantages for my vehicle by adding a quarter can of seafoam to a full tank of gas approximately every three or 6 months? Thanks for whatever advice you can pass along.
I will say a lot of the additives are good maintenance. If you're having a problem with the vehicle, oftentimes you can't, you know, we say you can't fix a car in a can, and that's true. But a lot of these fuel injection additives or these crankcase additives or a lot of these different items we add to the oil or fuel or have, read the can carefully, follow as described, and I don't think it will hurt necessarily. But if you're looking for a repair out of it, that's not going to happen. So just be careful. Look at what you're spending on that. If you remember, you know, we used to have heat, you know, a bunch of years ago. And
sure.
It was essentially, well, it was alcohol. Well, now we have ethanol in the fuel, so you don't need that. You know, there's enough ethanol in the field, so it absorbs that moisture, so we don't have that need anymore. And you know, if you use a good quality fuel, I would argue that a lot of the additives in that fuel are going to be what's in some of these products. Or same goes for oil. If you're using a good quality motor oil, a lot of the additives or packages that they put in that oil when they manufacture it are in there, so you don't necessarily need that additional items. But just keep in mind, if you're near and dear to your vehicle and you want to treat it to a little extra something, it won't hurt it. But, you know, I don't think you're going to get much of a gain.
All right. We've got more questions coming in via the text line here at 651-461-9226. Let's take this time out, Nick, and we'll come back and we'll chat some more. Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul, and we'll get to all of that coming up at News Talk 830 WCCO. Let's get right back into it. Car Talk here with Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul. You can reach them at lloydsautomotive.net, or you can get to us at 651-461-9226. Here's a question right off the get-go. What type of brake pads do you suggest, Nick, to eliminate brake dust? I'm curious about that myself because I've got nice wheels, but if they always look like they're covered with soot, then it doesn't look that good.
You know, I would say do a little research. Most often a ceramic-type brake pad produces much less brake dust, so you don't have that black stuff collecting on your wheels, which keep in mind, if you don't keep that clean, it'll become a permanent mark on your wheel. So, but, yeah, I would say that typically as you look at if you do it yourself or you're at the parts store and you're looking at the variety of brake pads, usually the ones that cost a little more money are ceramic-based. And if you read up on the information on there, oftentimes they do last longer, they're quieter, their braking capacity, and oftentimes might be promoted that it's better. So, you know, to be honest, most often what we use is a ceramic-based pad, just for that simple reason. We don't want noise, we don't want brake dust.
Okay. How about this one? I've got a 2006 Ford Explorer Eddie Bauer Edition, 325,000 miles. Replaced the blower motor. It's working. However, the airflow isn't as much as needed. The AC doesn't get cold enough, and the heat doesn't get warm enough. Any suggestions? And is that the kind of thing that you'd be willing to look at after they have been to a couple of other places and they haven't been able to fix that, Nick?
Well, I would say if we have an airflow issue, maybe there's something with that blower motor itself. The fan blade maybe isn't fastened properly. Maybe there's a restriction or the flaps. You know, we talked about this in the past where, you know, there's a series of motors most often and flaps that control the place or where the air is going and also the temperatures. It's a couple of different sets of flaps there. I would say the airflow issues related to something along those lines where if the AC is not as cold and the heat is not as hot, makes you think something with the temperature door isn't operating properly because even though they're in the same box, they're really not related or connected. You know, the heater core produces the heat, which comes off the engine running, and then the evaporator, which is part of the air conditioning system, comes from the compressor, which is a pump, which creates that change in pressures, which creates that coldness on that evaporator core. So the two different systems living in the same space. So if they both aren't working properly, you're thinking that there's something wrong with that area that they're living in, you know, something with that heater box. So I would advise them, you know, wherever in the community that you live in, you have a friend that has a reference, you have a shop nearby, share the whole story with them. That's another really important fact is when you bring your vehicle in, more information is not a bad thing. It helps us get to the bottom of it a little bit quicker. So write all these things down. So when you get to the shop, you have a nice, you know, sheet of paper with a description of what's happening and tell those folks what's going on, and that'll help them get to the bottom of it.
All right. Here's one. This is wide open, and I don't know where you would start, but it's a 2007 Jeep Liberty Sport with the check engine light on. Any idea what it could be? It could be just about anything, couldn't it, Nick?
Very true. That check engine light, by description, is an emissions light. That can be as simple as a gas cap being loose, as severe as a misfire within the engine, and anything in between. So our advice for people is if the check engine light is on and the vehicle is running normally, get a hold of your shop, make an appointment. You know, it might be a week or two before you can get in. That's okay. Make an appointment and proceed forward. If the vehicle is running a little bit rough, I would say you need to find somebody to get a look at sooner, you know, as soon as you can. And then if the light starts to flash repetitively, that's telling you that you shouldn't be driving a vehicle and you should have it towed. So there's kind of stages to live with it.
All right. Hey, I've got more questions lined up on the City's One Plumbing Talk and Text line. It's 651-461-9226. Let's get the time out here. We'll get the latest weather, a couple of commercial announcements, and come back and check more with Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul. On Grand, you'll find them, right there, as a matter of fact. You can also go to LloydsAutomotive.net, and a little later on, you can call them. We'll be right back. News Talk 830 WCCO. John Hines in for Denny Long on this Saturday morning. We are doing Car Talk with our friend Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul. Here's the phone number. Let me get this out now. And Nick, what time will people be answering that phone today at Lloyd's Automotive?
Well, actually, John, we're not. We give the staff the weekends for family time, so we won't be back until Monday.
Monday. Okay. Well, here's the number then: 651-228-1316. It's that easy. A couple more questions via the City's One Plumbing Talk and Text line. Riddle me this one if you can, Nick. I have a 2007 Solera. Do I need to clean the screen on the transmission or just change the fluid?
I would say most vehicles, it's a drain and fill process. If it is equipped with a filter, I would replace it. You know, cleaning the screen, which used to be a common thing years and years ago, but you know those filters aren't very expensive. When you clean it, you might get some of the stuff out of it, but you're not going to get it all. So I would say if you're going through the process of taking the pan down, you're already that far into it, I would say buying a new filter would be the appropriate procedure for sure. But like I started with, most often a drain and fill, some situations you can actually still do a flush, so do a little research, but cleaning the filter is not probably advised.
All right, now here's one that I think plagues many auto owners, especially those like me who are not really well-versed in auto mechanics here. I bought a 2020 Ford Escape on December 31st last year. It had 16,000 miles on it. Had the oil changed in July, nothing was wrong at that point. I had the oil changed yesterday, and now they're telling me that I need new tires, new brakes. This just doesn't sound realistic. I have 29,000 miles on it now. Give me your take on this. It seems like a bit excessive unless something really strange is happening with this ride.
Yeah, it's hard to know for sure. But always, if you're being told something when you're at the dealership, your repair shop, and you're unsure, have some follow-up questions. Look for an explanation. You know, I need tires, but why do I need tires? Maybe there's a gash in the sidewall. Maybe there's some abnormal wear. Maybe, who knows, right? But ask those questions. And same goes for the brakes. Okay, is 29,000 miles early to have the brakes replaced? I would say yes, but there are certain makes and models, driving conditions, where maybe the fronts or the rears have some premature wear. Maybe one of the calipers are hanging up. There are reasons sometimes for these repairs that seem a little early or excessive. And to follow up, if they can't give you a good explanation, maybe go get a second opinion. You know, so if you're don't be afraid to ask those questions. And then if those questions don't satisfy your what you're looking for, go get a second opinion, and then you have a couple things to compare.
Yeah, a second opinion, I think, is critical, especially in a case like this. If you're talking about new tires and new brakes on a car that's only 3 years old. I've had vehicles where I've gone into the shop for oil change and tire rotation, and of course, like so many good, dependable shops, they check for the wear and tear on various things, including the brakes. And I had one service manager say, "Don't you ever stop? Because the brakes don't seem to show a lot of wear and tear, but I think it's about how we drive. I mean, are we the type of a driver that does those jackrabbit starts and then all of a sudden you have to stand on the brakes when you get two blocks later to the next red light? That's the kind of thing that can take some wear and tear, right, Nick?
Absolutely. You know, are you on the highway a lot? Is your commute where it's all sustained speeds, or are you in stop-and-go traffic? You know, the driving conditions, driving habits, types of vehicle too. You know, vehicles aren't all the same, and they don't wear the same. So, you know, keep that in mind. But like we said earlier, just ask those questions. If somebody's selling you a bill of goods, they should be able to explain why. And if that doesn't satisfy you, I would take that information, go get a second opinion, and then, you know, you have some comparisons, and you can get to the bottom of it.
Very good stuff all the way around. LloydsAutomotive.net. That's LLOYDS, automotive.net. Or you can always call them, too, on Monday at 651-228-1316, where they work at getting your car in and out in the same day wherever possible. And as Nick, you pointed out, maybe these things might change as we get into the UAW strike and we see the ripple effects down the road. But we wish everybody the best of luck in that case and to see how that plays out. We'll catch up with you again next week. I believe Denny Long is back with you, Nick, and I appreciate your joining me this Saturday morning here on Car Talk at News Talk 830 WCCO.